You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. If you're just joining us, rumors are that the Browns, Adam Schefter reporting, Ian Rappaport reporting, Mike Floyd reporting that the Browns will be trading Barkevius Mingo, the sixth overall pick in the 2013 NFL draft, to the New England Patriots. If we get any confirmation of that while we're on air, we will certainly let you know. While one former first rounder may be on the move, the other first rounder of the Browns from 2016, Corey Coleman, is always on the move, typically into the end zone, and yesterday even hurdling fences after scoring against the Buccaneers. He spoke with the media after his joint practices with Tampa Bay, and here's what the Browns youngster had to say.
Assess these 2 days of training camp. How do you feel about the way things are going?
Pretty good, man. We're out here. It's hot out here, but getting better, going against, you know, a real good team.
You feel ready to go Friday, as far as you can tell?
Yeah, I feel, you know, really good. You know, we took it slow, easing me back in, but now I'm full speed, full go.
What do you hope to accomplish in your first preseason game?
Really accomplish a win and get better and compete at a high level and make sure I do all my assignments right.
How do you feel like you did in these 2 days of practices, just you and specifically?
I think I did pretty good. You know, still got room to improve, but overall, I think I came here and did my job, got back into great shape out here and just competing with guys at a high level.
What's been the toughest thing you've had to overcome to get back to where you are right now?
Really just, you know, timing with quarterback, just getting back in the rhythm, you know, getting him used to me being back out there.
Since that team scrimmage where you were the kind of the main guy, you've had Pryor kind of get more and more into the flow, and now you got Gordon on the field. So is your positioning in the formation changed with them on the field?
No, you know, Coach Hugh is going to find ways to get everybody the ball, and does a good job getting us, you know, putting us in good situations and putting us on the field to make plays.
How dangerous do you think the three of you guys can be as a trio?
We got a lot of potential, but we got a lot of work to keep going, but I think that we can be really, really something special too.
That last play of the practice, you know, leaped the fence there a little bit. Was it dangerous at all to you?
I didn't want to run into the little banner thing they got around there, so I had to jump. I took a quick glance at the ground.
Seems like the hamstring held up well for that.
Yeah, I'm pretty good now.
Do you think you'll be able to return punts in this game too?
I think I'm going to get back there on punt return. It might have me return a few.
You came out of an explosive offense at Baylor. When you look around you and you see, you know, you and Josh and Terrell, and you got RG throwing you the ball, and Gary and Duke, what are your thoughts? Can this be as explosive as what you came from?
Right, I think so. We got a lot of talent on the field. It's kind of scary. So many guys can do different things. But I'm just excited to see where we're going to go.
Corey, what has it been like waiting to get on the field in a real game setting? Has it been tough? Has it been annoying? I mean, what are your emotions like?
It's been tough. You know, I was watching. I was happy for my team. The guys are making great plays out there. I wanted to be out there to help them, and now I'm back, and I'm ready to roll.
Do you have any kind of idea what you're going to be feeling Friday night, first NFL game?
I think I'd be a little nervous, but once I step out there, I think I'd be fine.
Any hesitation whatsoever about the hamstring?
No, not at all. I'm fine.
That's Browns wide receiver Corey Coleman there. It's crazy to say, Matt, we've seen him so much that he's actually going to make his NFL debut tomorrow.
Yeah, it's exciting. It really is.
Yeah.
I think the same way that Terrell Pryor has kind of stolen the show with his big play ability in game one against the Packers and game two against the Falcons with the touchdown, don't be surprised if Hugh, in the first, say, 12 plays, are going to run, quote-unquote, Corey Coleman-specific routes or plays to get him the football and give Browns fans, give the Bengals, Ravens, and Steelers just a little inclination of how special this young man is.
I can't wait to see him. I can't wait to see Gordon, Joe Hayden, all making their preseason debuts for the Browns this Friday, which is certainly going to be something that is very, very fun to watch for the offensive side. And I can't, you know, Barkevius Mingo, again, going to the Patriots, according to numerous reports out there. It's amazing. Daryl Ryder just pointing out on Twitter that out of the Browns' first-round draft picks from 2011 to 2014, only Justin Gilbert is left on this team in 2016, and that says a lot about why this team has not been able to get back to the level that everybody wants them to be
at. And is
it
any surprise that, the same way that you and I talked about how positive it is, to get Mingo off our books, that, a local person has some negative take about the Browns collectively? It's such an easy thing
to
just
pump
out. It is,
but that's a pretty startling fact.
It is. But I mean, but to be very honest, it's like anybody who knows anything about the Cleveland Browns could have probably gone, wait, another first-round pick? And I just think that the first thing out of someone's mouth doesn't always have to be negative.
Agreed. And you know what? This team's going to have to eventually earn it with positive performance on the field. And for those wondering if you wanted to take that kind of walk down memory lane for the Browns and their draft picks in 2015, of course, it's Danny Sheldon Irving. So he said from 2011 to 2014, 14 was Gilbert and Manziel, 13 Barkevius Mingo, 2012 Trent Richardson and Brandon Whedon, 2011 Phil Taylor. And you can actually even go beyond that. From 2011, in terms of first and second round picks, Phil Taylor, Jabal Sheard, Greg Little, all gone. 2012, Trent Richardson, Brandon Whedon, Mitchell Schwartz, all gone. 2013, you had no second round pick. 2014, Joel Bitonio. So for that 4-year stretch, when you had 6 first round picks and 4 second round picks, of those 10 players drafted in the first and second round from 2011 to 2014, only Justin Gilbert and Joel Bitonio remain Browns, if in fact Mingo is.
Let me ask you this question, Nathan, right before we go to break. Would you rather have had Teddy Bridgewater in 14 or Julio Jones in place of Phil Taylor?
I think quarterback's the most important position, so I would say Teddy Bridgewater. However, given what I have seen from some Robert Griffin III, I would love to have Julio here and RG3, but that'd be a lot would have had to happen.
You're trying to have your KD too, bro.
That's right. I'm trying. Here's what Schefter is saying. The Browns are trading linebacker Barkevius Mingo to the Patriots, a source has said. The Browns did not pick up his option, blah, 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 blah. Mike Lombardi was the general manager of the Browns when he was drafted. He spent the 2014-15 seasons as an assistant to the Pats coaching staff and remains a confidant to Bill Belichick. He does not say anything about the possible compensation back, even though he said some of the details on the trade. That was a little bit of clickbaiting, and he got me. But there has nothing yet about the compensation or any confirmation of any kind that this is happening. But you can see the links. The Patriots, I know, have been interested in Mingo for a while. There were rumors about Mingo being traded at the deadline last year as well that did not come to pass, obviously. But perhaps this rumor will, in fact, be true. When we come back, we're going to go around the league and still to come Mary Kay Cabot with the latest on what she's hearing about Mingo, what she learned in her talk with, of course, Sashi Brown, the executive vice president of the Cleveland Browns earlier today. She comes up at 2:30. Around the league next on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Ian Rappaport reporting that former Browns first-round pick Barkevius Mingo will fly to New England tonight and join the Patriots. Source said it's all a formality now. So that is the closest we've gotten to any kind of confirmation. Again, still nothing official from the team. If I get any of that before we go off the air, I will certainly let you know on that side of things. So it looks like he will be going there, according to Ian Rappaport, who said it is all a formality at this point. All right, let's bring in our producer, Danny, to come in here and take us.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Number one.
Do we overemphasize this third preseason game around the league? Is it truly a good barometer of how good or bad a team will be?
I don't necessarily believe it's a good barometer of how good or bad a team's going to be collectively as the year go on, and I don't know if there's an analytic out there to support that. But I think to your fan base, to your head coach, it's a barometer of how ready you were going to be for week one, because it's the closest you're going to look and it's going to feel to week one because of the emphasis of the slight amount of game planning that's going in and the amount that we're going to see our starters.
I don't think that there's any correlation between preseason success. I think you can get an idea from it. I'll be curious to see if the joint practices are more of a barometer for me after, you know, be a small sample size. But last year was certainly right on the money. We'll see if this year's is right on the money as well. I don't think there's any correlation between winning and losing. I do think there's a correlation between how your team looks in the preseason. And then when I mean your team, the guys that are going to be playing your first team, I think you can get some type of insight from that. But I think it is loosely correlated because there isn't game planning. There isn't opponent-specific game planning. There's none of that chess match that really defines what week-in, week-out NFL football is all about, at least as I understand it.
Number two.
Which side is most at fault for the Joey Bosa debacle?
One of my great friends, a doctor friend of mine, like texted me this morning just about the Buckeyes, and he goes, "What's up with the Bosa thing?" And I haven't swayed from my take on this over the past, you know, 3 weeks since it started. I go, Joey Bosa looks bad in this situation, and I think the San Diego Chargers look bad in this situation. And after the comments yesterday by both sides, you know, the, you know, CAA on behalf of Joey Bosa and the Chargers coming out about it being asinine and the fact, but there is something to be said that when you dig in, that Carson Wentz is the only player of all the first round picks to get more guaranteed money than the Chargers had offered Joey Bosa up to this point, or their most recent offer. There's something to be said about that when he was drafted, what, two picks later, I believe, correct?
Yes.
So, I don't know. I think everyone looks bad. It's not good for the Chargers. It's not going to help them, you know, win a football game. It's not going to help the same way that a lot of draft picks might have not have wanted or looked bad upon the Cleveland organization. If I'm a first-round pick and I'm on a top 10 pick, you might not want to go to San Diego because of their history in situations like this.
I'm starting to believe there is more than meets the eye to this situation. I'm starting to believe that Joey Bosa never wanted to be a San Diego Charger. And I could be wrong about that. I don't know what you've heard through your Ohio State pipeline. But, you know, and I know that anybody can spin the news the way that they want. And, you know, clearly the Chargers said their piece. Bosa's side said their piece. And Ed Werder even said that, you know, somebody said nobody in the top 10 is getting, or top 5 would deal with what Bosa's getting. Well, apparently Ezekiel Elliott had the same stuff in his contract with, and basically all of the first rounders did except for Carson Wentz in the top, I guess Goff had similar language, Ezekiel Elliott, who was fourth, and then Bosa third. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe Joey Bosa just doesn't want to be a San Diego Charger.
Could definitely be the case.
Number three.
If you were John Elway, who would you start at quarterback for your team in week one?
I don't necessarily know. I think week one, Mark Sanchez may get the nod, even though he hasn't been all that impressive in the preseason. But I would, and I'm not saying quick hook, but I would know in my mind, and based on what I've seen thus far and the progression from a week to week on how Paxton Lynch is growing as a quarterback, and also the supporting cast around that football team, meaning how productive and dominant are we going to be on defense again? And also, what is our offense, or what's the type of drop-off we're looking at? If we're at a, you know, say an 8.5 with Mark Sanchez and we drop to a 6, you stay Mark Sanchez. But if we're only going to drop to like a 7.5 or a 7 with Paxton Lynch and our defense is playing great, it may be worth the transition to the young kid, give him a shot. If your defense is going to win you football games, you have the ability to run the football, and you still have the playmakers that we know they have.
So for me, I was actually asked this question and with Ken Carmen on the Hugh Jackson Show, and I'm starting Paxton Lynch, and I'm going to lay out my case for why. Paxton Lynch is the only quarterback on that roster that has the potential to be better by the playoffs than he is right now. And the only way he's going to get better is by playing. Mark Sanchez stinks. Okay, we all know he stinks. He's not a good quarterback. So why are you going to play him? Trevor Siemian honestly, when I watch him throw the football, it harkens back to my quest to get out there in the fourth preseason game. So I'm not impressed with him either. So Paxton Lynch is the one guy that flashes something, and I think in practice, the way you hear the guys talk about him, he shows you something. I have a hard time thinking that this team is going to get excited about being led by Mark Sanchez or Trevor Siemian. If Paxton Lynch can flash enough in practice, and you can probably speak to this better than I can, but players see that, and I think that matters to them, that they see, hey, this guy's got an opportunity here, whereas I have a hard time seeing Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware and Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr. get excited to be led out on the field by Mark Sanchez. This is a team that won a year ago with basically the worst quarterback play in the league from Peyton Manning, but at least he was a guy that was inspirational, and maybe they could see, look, if we can do our job early and get Paxton Lynch these reps and get him better, he's the guy that actually gives us the best chance to run the table again in the season that really matters for the defending Super Bowl champions.
Like,
are you winning
four.
A Super Bowl? I'm sorry. Are you winning a Super Bowl with Mark Sanchez? Do you think anybody there believes that they're winning a Super Bowl with Mark Sanchez? No way.
Number four.
There we go. Fact or fiction, Josh Norman will have as good a year this year as he had last year.
I'm going to say fiction because I'll be very honest. Going into 2015, I didn't know who Josh Norman was personally. And I think I learned very quickly, and my eyes were drawn to how dominant he became. And this is even before the whole Odell Beckham Jr. stuff. How dominant he became for a very, very good football team that, of course, represented the NFC in the Super Bowl. And I just think with a change of scenery, and there's just something about the Washington Redskins, and, you know, even, you know, bunch in RG3, but it's something about Dan Snyder as the owner and then and DeSean Jackson and his mouth and not being the same player he was in Philly. Just something's not right there in Washington, and I think there's going to be a drop-off.
So when I look at this situation, I think that he was in the perfect situation. Carolina played a lot of zone. He's going to be asked to play a lot more man. Now, it's something he has been effective with, but he has been one of the reasons they let him go is they felt that he was a great system quarterback, cornerback, and they had a great system there. I don't think he will be as good this year as he was a year ago. He's going to have some very tough matchups in that division. Obviously, Dez Bryant twice a year, Odell Beckham twice a year. And now, granted, he worked against Julio Jones twice a year in the AFC South, Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson. So there were some good corners in the NFC South. I'm sorry. There were good corners there. But I really believe that last year was a great year for Josh Norman, and this year will be a good year, but not quite as good. And there it is. We've gone around the league. When we come back, Mary Kay Cabot will be with us. The latest on the Barkevious Mingo situation from her. Also what she heard from Sashi Brown today when she had an opportunity to talk to the Browns Executive Vice President of Football Operations. We'll also get her take on the joint practices with the Bucks and where this Browns team stands. That's coming up when we return here on Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. We quickly go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, we'll obviously get to the joint practices. We'll get to your time with Sashi Brown, but there is news out there, reports that Barkevious Mingo has been traded to the New England Patriots. No confirmation yet from the team. What are you hearing on that front?
That's true. They're in the process of completing the trade right now. I think for the most part, it's probably basically a done deal, but I think they wanted to just kind of finalize it so that, so that Barkevious knew exactly what was going on. In fact, I'm in the lobby of the team hotel right now, and I just saw him walk by a little bit ago. But, the reports are true, and as soon as they finalize it, which should be soon, you know, he will probably be on his way to Carolina today. I'm sorry. That's the Patriots are playing against the Panthers tomorrow night, and he
right,
will
so go
there.
Right, to Carolina to join the team. Sure.
Right.
Sure. All right, Mary Kay, when you look at this situation with Mingo, obviously they were trying to find a home with him. Is this a big surprise to you, and do you consider this a win in some ways for the Browns because they're either going to have to cut him and eat $5 million or keep him when it seemed like he had no home?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a win. I mean, I really thought that that they were going to cut him this year. I mean, he's been playing inside linebacker, but not only that, they have been using him deep into preseason games where you see, you know, a lot of the guys that aren't going to be making this football team playing in those, you know, third and fourth quarters. So the writing was on the wall. He was not living up to his first round expectations at all. And when we talked to Sashi Brown today, he basically said, yeah, he's showing up for us on special teams, but not on defense. We need him to show more on defense. Everyone could see that. I don't even think Barkevious thought he was going to be around. And if you go back to last year, there was plenty of talk, speculation. I actually talked to Barkevious last year about the fact that, you know, they thought about asking to be traded. You know, I think the Browns tried to trade him. And, you know, it basically, you know, has worked out where, you know, now it's over and he's gone. He's going to be a Patriot.
And that's absolutely true, Mary Kay. And to get to this week, you know, practicing against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in preparation for tomorrow night's football game, just clue in everybody that's not there, myself included, about how different it looks this year competitively as it did to last year's visit with the Buffalo Bills.
You know, it was I want to make sure I'm answering the right question because there's a lot going on in this lobby of this hotel right now, to be honest with you. But you want to know exactly, you know, how these practices benefited them as opposed to last year?
Or just how they looked
yes.
compared to last year.
Yeah.
Last year we went to Buffalo and it was a rude awakening.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think they got a lot of good work this year and a lot of good stuff came out of this practice and they kept it. You know, they didn't do, you know, full tackling to the ground, and they kept it to the point where, you know, they got good work done in these 2 days, but nobody really got injured. The only casualty out of these 2 days so far was Cam Irving sprained his ankle. But again, I you know, kind of saw him a little bit today. He didn't have a boot on. He didn't appear to be limping. He should be okay. It didn't look to be too serious.
Talking with Mary Kay Cabot from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Mary Kay, you got an opportunity to be with Sashi Brown today. One of the things that was addressed were the Josh Gordon trade rumors. He said the team not looking to trade Josh Gordon. What was kind of your key takeaway on the Gordon piece of that exchange today?
Well, you know what? Again, every player has his price. And, you know, it just depends on what your value to the football team is. And I think what they're trying to say is the price on Josh Gordon is pretty high. They value him. They think he can be a key piece of this offense going forward. He's looked good enough in practices that you see those glimpses of the Pro Bowl player that he was in 2013. So I think, you know, the message is, hey, if you want Josh Gordon, you're going to have to pay big time to get him. Every single player in the NFL has his price. And, you know, Sashi confirmed that. It's not like he's off limits. It's nothing like that. Nobody is, really. But I would have to think that you're going to have to come up with a first-round pick if you want Josh Gordon.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at that point, that changes the game just simply with the you know, the onus that we may put on a first-round pick with the new mentality that Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta have here in Cleveland. Mary Kay, one thing that Nathan pointed out earlier in the show, and I just kind of want your take on it, is Joe Hayden. How great he's looked with, you know, interceptions on consecutive days. And is at this point right now in training camp, does it look like Joe Hayden is set to become the Joe Hayden that we've all become familiar with?
Well, you know, you don't want to jump the gun too much on that, but it's a very, very good sign that, you know, that he got those two interceptions and that he's playing with a lot of confidence. He's playing with speed. He looks to have really fresh legs. And he's just really, really excited. He's hungry and really just wants to get back to the player that he was. I still think that it's going to take a little time to round into shape. I think anytime you miss that much time that he missed last year, you know, you're not going to necessarily 100% full-time be the player that you were right away. But I think he'll work his way back to that end, and these were encouraging practices for him.
Mary Kay, this was the first time we were able to see Gordon, Pryor, and Coleman together against another opponent. What were your impressions of that trio of receivers and how that can impact this offense?
Wow, you know what? I just look at those guys, and we've talked about this before on the show. You could just tell that this is a dynamic, explosive offense in the making, not just because of the players that are on it, but because of the way that Hugh Jackson wants to run it and the way that Al Saunders and Pep Hamilton are going to operate this thing. But when you see those guys out there, you see Terrell Pryor, who, you know, I've been a believer in him since last year when he first showed up on the doorstep. And then you see Josh, you see, you know, that he is putting the work in to be the guy that he was back in 2013, and then Corey Coleman really coming along. Even though he's had the tremendous setback, you know, once he's healthy, there's going to be a lot to worry about on this offense.
Mary Kay, something that's been just a little bit troubling for a lot of us through two preseason games is the defense. And do you think the defense has really fought this week to get on the right side of the football in regards to, you know, stopping the run against a guy like Doug Martin and just really playing intense football as opposed to sitting back and looking very similar to the way they have in years past?
Well, yeah, you know, this is the Ray Horton, you know, attack-minded defense. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of young guys on this defense that are ready to get out there and prove and make a name for themselves. And they're hungry, and they're fast, and they're big, and they have the qualities that you want to see. And Ray is going to send them, and they're going to attack. Now, the thing is that I think what's been hampering and holding back this defense, they've been trying so many guys in so many different roles that you know, that has hampered this defense. It's hurt them in terms of just trying to actually, you know, stop the run and things like that during a game. But I don't think that it's going to be as bad as it seems once they start to get into the games and they settle these guys into the positions they're going to play and they find out who the playmakers are. I think they're there, and I think they're going to overachieve, and some of these young guys will emerge like you're already seeing a guy like Carl Nassib start to do.
Mary Kay, last one for me, and we'll let you go because I know you want to probably tie a bow on this news here around Mingo. What is the one thing you're looking forward to seeing the most tomorrow night, and what's one thing that you really want to see from this team to make you feel better headed into the regular season?
Well, you know what? I think there's two, actually. I do want to see Joe Hayden and what he can do when he's added to the defense, and I want to see what the offense looks like when you add Corey Coleman to the offense. So it is a big week for both of those guys. It's the final tune-up, really, for guys of that caliber. And, you know, they should both make huge differences on their sides of the ball.
All right, Mary Kay, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your updates on this Barkevious Mingo situation. It looks like the former first-round pick going to Carolina, which is where the Patriots are, because he's being traded to the New England Patriots. Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland Plain Dealer, and Cleveland.com, our guest on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. Thanks so much, Mary Kay.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll be back after this, wrapping up our show on this Thursday. One day before preseason game number 3, the penultimate preseason game, we'll see the starters for the most time we have seen them all off season when the Browns and the Bucks do battle at Raymond James Stadium on national TV on CBS tomorrow night. Back with our final thoughts right here, right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here, wrapping it up on this Thursday. And obviously the big news, Barkevious Mingo will apparently on his way to the New England Patriots. If we get confirmation for you in the next few minutes, we'll get it to you. Otherwise, keep it tuned to ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app for the latest on Barkevious Mingo and what happens there. I got a couple Twitter questions that I wanted to see your answer on. One, it comes from our guy, the Real BV. He says, if Mingo does get traded, Matt, who benefits the most at linebacker, or is it somebody maybe not at linebacker that benefits the most?
I actually think, and you and I discussed this kind of in the break, Nathan, is I think the Cleveland Browns benefit from the trade for Barkevious Mingo, not necessarily one guy on defense, but what it does, as you and I probably constructed our 53-man roster, or those of you out there who have, you kind of counted Barkevious Mingo on that roster, even though he was a core player on our special teams and kind of a role player or in a significant backup on defense. He didn't really have a role for $5 million. So now what this does, at least in my mind, it's you're going to cut down to 75, you're going to cut down to 53, and you're going to, you know, Sagony and his crew of guys are going to, you know, really be in tune to that waiver wire to see who becomes available, who are some of the surprise cuts out there that you can actually bring in. So we might get down to 53, but it's not actually going to be who the 53 that march on the football field in Philadelphia on September 11th.
This is an interesting question that comes to our guy, P. Myers Golf. By the way, we got to meet P. Myers Golf yesterday. We met Brad Solberger. I'm going to see the real BV at the game. So it's been a little CBD reunion. But he says, this is actually from G.I. George, our other buddy behind enemy lines, who's in Baltimore, not down here. He said, is Justin Gilbert seen as a rookie, raw and essentially uncoached by the Browns coaching staff? What's your take on that?
I would say yes. And the reason why I say that is because every time a question comes up either to Louis Chofi, Ray Horton, or Hugh Jackson in reference to Justin Gilbert, the question is always coming from a place of his past on what he has not been able to do or the lack of the skill that we've seen out of him in 2 years. And all of them essentially answer the same way. I don't really care or know a whole lot about what Justin Gilbert was prior to us taking over. And all I know is, and then they say X, he's developing here. He's being more consistent doing these things. And that's all I can really base my judgment in this situation off of. He's going to make this team because in a similar situation, we thought Minga was going to make this team. We're paying him the money anyway. You hope the more time, the same way Robert Griffin III, the more time he spends with Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton in this scheme, the better he will get, even though he's already proven something in the NFL. We hope that Louis Chofi and Ray Horton can mold Justin Gilbert. Maybe when the time's right, not this year, but next year, it finally just clicks for him and he becomes the corner we thought he'd be back in 2014.
Certainly hope so. Now, another question I had for you. You know Tremont Williams very, very well. He, you know, right now they've elevated Jamar Taylor. He said yesterday the reason for my demotion I was told was not my play. How is Tremont Williams going to handle perhaps the ascension of Jamar Taylor if it means that he's moving inside? We've seen Josh McCown be a model example of a veteran doing what's best for this team. And Tremont Williams strikes me as the kind of guy that will do just that. But he's also a very proud guy who I think is going to want to be out there.
He's definitely a proud guy who wants to be out there. And the reason why, because he's never really not been out there. So it's going to take a little getting used to. But just like you said, and I think you hit it right on the head, Nathan, that he is a lot like Josh McCown. And in coming here with a big number at cornerback, he is essentially playing a role for us to be able to play the number two corner opposite Joe Hayden or to be the nickelback if, in fact, Jamar Taylor does start outside. So he's definitely playing a role for us and will have to play great for us to be successful on defense. But he's not going to be one of those locker room distractions because in his, you know, whatever he said in his comments, not, you know, 9 years going on 10 or 10 going on 11, he has probably had a situation just like his happen at the corner spot opposite him in Green Bay over the course of his, you know, 7 or 8, 9 years that he's been there. So he understands it's part of the business. And for him, I would think keep your mouth shut, put your nose down, and grind it out. And that would be appreciated from Ray Horton and Hugh Jackson.
I think it will be appreciated. We got it. You know, he's a guy, you need some of those veterans still here with all these young guys, and he's a guy who's done it at a high level and I think will help. I feel pretty good, by the way, with the way that Jamar Taylor competed against the Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson down here in Tampa, that the Hayden, Taylor, Williams group is good. Still want to see plays, and we'll talk tomorrow about what we want to see in this game as we really get into the preseason game, but I want to see these safeties step up and make some plays. Two guys in new roles as starters, and that's something we're still waiting to see, and hopefully we will see it. Again, keep it tuned to ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, for the latest on the Barkevious Mingo trade rumor. It seems that he is going to New England, dealt to the Patriots, the former 2013 first rounder for the Browns. Got to thank Jason Gibbs for setting it all up today. Of course, Danny Cunningham, Jenna Lane, who covers the Bucks for ESPN, Mary Kay Cabot, and my guy Matt Wilhelm. For Matt, I am Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.